Hello and good evening from Yerushalayim Eretz Kodesh. Welcome to Kol Yom Hadaf. Tonight we're going to discuss things pertaining to the 13th paragraph of Tzibrachim, Ashechet, Ramala, the Dinim of Shechut Echutz. As usual, we're going to mix in the archaeology and the history together with the Gemara, and we'll talk about some very interesting things. So first we have to go to the basics, and the basics is that there's an issue in the Torah of Shechut Echutz. It's mentioned in Parshas Achronos. There's actually two parshas over there. One is the issue of Shechut Echutz, the issue of shechting a korban outside of the Azara, v'pesach ha'omer le'evir, like of korban Hashem, it's an issue of kares. And the second one, the second parsha right after that, v'aleim toimar, ishish kiyale oilo izavach, v'pesach ha'omer le'evir, the issue of ha'aloh. So it's actually two chiyuv ikares, two isurim, one is shechita and one is halah. One is shechting a carbon outside, and the second is being male to take a carbon and put it on the mizbeach, is also a separate isur. And the dinim of shechita and halah are sometimes different, have some differences between them. So those are two isurim of shechut echutz. I'm not really sure where we're going to start, but in Tanakh we have numerous times the fact that even after the Beis Hamikdash was built, and as the Gemara says in Tzibrachim, the last parak, that when Yerushalayim became Kodesh, Nes Rabamas, V'lai Alem Od Heter, there was an Isser shechting outside of Yerushalayim, outside of the Azara. Still, nonetheless, Oida Amis Abchim Amakachim Babamas. Nonetheless, Am Yisrael continued the practice of shechting and being makter in the bamos. Makter can be one of two things by definition. It can either mean bringing ktoras, or it can mean the haktora, meaning halah, meaning taking the limbs of the animal and being makter on the mizbeach. It can be one of those two by definition. Probably the second one is more accurate in this case. Muzab and Makatrim, I assume, means Haktor of Halah. You don't say Halah. But we have that all numerous places, Pasha Shkolim, Haftarah coming up, Muzab and Makatrim, Babamos. Even the best kings who got rid of all the Avodah Zarahs, but the Bamos remained. Now the Bamos were not Avodah Zarah. Now it's an issue of Shechut Echutz, and Shechut Echutz is a terrible Avera and punished by Kares. But it's still less than Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, when a person's makrif to Avodah Zarah, it's a chiv misa and b'nei beis din, it's a chiv skila, which is the most severe punishment. And shechut echutz is only kares. The beis din don't punish on it, it's less. And so there's a difference between Avodah Zarah and shechut echutz. And if we mention another Gemara in the end of Benachos, the Gemara in the end of Benachos says, Hakonim, Shashim Shabbat Vaishanya, we're in that Kuftes, Kuftes Amar Aleph, Hakonim Shashim Shabbat Vaishanya, La Yisham Shabbat Mikdash of Yerushalayim. The Kohanim who served in Beis Chanyo are not eligible to serve in the Beis Hamikdash in Yerushalayim. So the Gemara goes into a whole detail. What is this Beis Chanyo? And the Gemara says it's talking about a place in Alexandria where one of the sons of Shimon HaTzadik made a place where they were makriv korbanos. And the Gemara goes into whole detail, and the Gemara proves it says if they serve the Beis Chanyo, they're not eligible to serve in Shalayim. Vein tzarech lama ledavarach, no need to mention a Kohen who served in a Beis Avodah Zarah, of course he cannot serve in the Beis Hamikdash in Shalayim. So the Gemara says, you see from here, the Beis Chanyo was not Avodah Zarah, and that's a machlokus in the Braisa over there, Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, if Beis Chanyo was Avodah Zarah or just Shechut Echutz. But anyway, it's two separate averus, and we see that even the best kings could not get rid of the bamos, and the first king who was able to get rid of the bamos was King Chizkiyo. And remember, King Chizkiyo is a few hundred years after the Beis Hamikdash is already built. So for a few hundred years, the bamos remain and only Chizkiyo was able to, in his efforts, was able to get rid of the bamos. the Bamos returned shortly after when his son Menashe, who was a big rush at first, brought back the Bamos that Chizkio, his father, had destroyed. And okay, we're looking for the Pesukim over here. We're in Melachim, base, Yudches. It talks about Chizkio became king. Hayas Yosha ben Hashem Choshes David Aviv, who hates Sabamos v'Shiba Samatzevos v'Choras es Hashera. He was the one who got rid of the Bamos. So he's the first king to get rid of the Bamos, but shortly afterwards, a few years afterwards, when Chizkio passed away, his son Menashe came and brought back the Bamos, and the king that got rid of them for good was one of the last kings around the Malchut Yehuda, and that was King Yoshio. And the details of his war against the Bamos, his destruction of the Bamos, can be found in Melachim, Perek Beis, Pasuk Chav Gimel. He is the one who got rid of these Bamos. So again, all the other kings were not able, for some reason, they were able to get rid of Avodah Zarah. We have Yehoshaphat, we have Asa, they were able to get rid of the Avodah Zarah. But the Bamos, they were not able to get rid of. And the only key, and the only Chizkio, and later on Yoshio, finally get rid of the Bamos. What's interesting is when we look in Perek Chav Gimel, we look in Perek Chav Gimel where it has the whole story of Yoshio getting rid of the Bamos. It goes through a whole list of things that Yoshio did. He got rid of the Avodah Zarah, which had been around, and he got rid of the Bamos. And it, as we said, Melachim Beis Chav Gimel, it says, Vayitaz is Bosa HaKadeshim, and he smashed over here, and he smashed this. It gives a whole list of things that he smashed. Vegamus haMizbech haShabaveisel haBamos haSay Yerov Menavat the Bamos which Yerov Menavat didn't base on. Vegamus haMizbech haIvas haBamos haSat. He smashed that Bama. So he goes and smashes all these Avodah Zarahs, hoping to bring Klal Yisrael back to Hashem. But what we have interesting thing is that in three places it doesn't mention the term of Nasat, and it changes the term. It says like this. Vayomes kol kohanim me'ore Yehuda. He brought all the kohanim from the cities of Yehuda. Vayitameis habamos hashakitu shama kohanim migeva bat Be'er-Sheva. He was mitamei the bamos, and he doesn't say natatz. Then it says natatz is bamota sharim hashapesach shari Yoshua sarayu. He smashed the bamos which were at the gates of the city, but by the other bamos it says vitamei. Then it says vitamei satofes hashabegei benino. He was metame the tofes in Gei Ben Hinnom in Yerushalayim that people should not do this abomination of Molech where they sacrifice their children for Avodah Zarah. And the third place where it says Timei Vesabamos Hashapnei Yerushalayim, the bamos which are east of Yerushalayim, Shemimin Lahar Mashchus, which was south of Har Mashchus, which is Har Hazesim, Ashabana Shlomo Melech Yisrael, that Shlomo built Lashtor Shikut Sidonim. So we have over here the term Timei instead of Natatz. The Radak is the first one to already point out the difference between Timei and Natatz by definition. And the Radak explains that since these Bamos that we're talking about were Bamos Hashem Shemayim, now, true, they was an issue to be Makir over there Hashem Shemayim because it's Shchut Echutz, but it's not over the Zara. Since they were Makir of Hashem Shemayim, so there was an iser to destroy these bamos. You didn't treat them the same way that you treated the bamos that were for Avodah Zarah. So the bama in Beit El, Yerov Menavot, he made the Agolim, that was Avodah Zarah that he smashed. The Kohanim who served over there, the Pasuk says, he killed them, he executed them. Yet, here, these other bamos, what does he do with the Kohanim? He doesn't kill them. He takes all the Kohanim, and he brings him back, he brings him to Yerushalayim, and there's the pasuk, by the way, which we mentioned, which the Gemara mentions, that a person who served in a bama should not be makir, a Kohen who served in the bama cannot be makir Yerushalayim, says, Achlo yolo kohanim ha-bama shemizbach Hashem Yerushalayim. These kohanim are brought to Yerushalayim, but they would not be able to serve in Yerushalayim because they had served in the bamos all over the place. However, kim achlo matzos v'sochachayim, they were able to eat matzos v'sochachayim, which means they were able to get a share of kabanos in Yerushalayim from the chelik they got, but they could not serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Just as Kohanim Balei Mumina says, cholkim v'ochlo v'lo makriv, they got a chelik and they're not makriv. So what's interesting about this, and we're going to start the analysis of the different bamas that were found in excavations, we're going to start with the Bama Narad, which is one of the most fascinating things. Arad is a place which probably was very close to the southern border of Eretz Yisrael, or at least the one of the southernmost cities in Eretz Yisrael at the time, in Bais Rishon, near Be'er Sheva. And Be'er Sheva is always mentioned as the southernmost city, Midan Bad Be'er Sheva, or in this case, Megeva at Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva, one of the southernmost cities. And excavations at Arad revealed a fortress. There was a city there, but from Bais Rishon, all there was a fortress. A fortress at Arad. And the fortress was probably a military fortress, a government function fortress. Documents were found over there, written on Klecheres, Ostraka. We know it was a place where taxes were brought and food was distributed out to king's workers and stuff like that. One part of this fortress was actually the Bama, or the Mikdash, the place where they were Makrif Korbanos. And this was excavated, and the amazing thing by the excavation was found that the Bama Narad had been, well, first of all, what did they find over there? What can we know that they found over there? They found remains of a Mizbech, remains. The Mizbech pretty much intact. And the Mizbech was actually 2.5 by 2.5 meters. Not perfect square, but close to a square. And 2.5 by 2.5 meters, which is about 5 amos by 5 amos, meaning around the size of the Mizbech mentioned in the Mishkan. It was made from plain stones that were not chiseled, as there's an issue in the Torah, in the end of Parshas Yisroi, that you're not allowed to chisel the stones. It was made from stones that were not chiseled, and inside of it was dirt. It was mamash mizbech adama, literally. And they found the mizbech there, and they also found a lot of bones in the area. I don't have the exact report on the bones. I have it at home. I never had a chance to review it. They found a lot of bones of kosher animals. Shouldn't surprise us. I mean, that's common, the animals that were common in those years. One thing we do know from all these sites where they worshipped the animals that they were makir of them are all young animals. You don't wait till it gets a balmum, so they're usually within a year or two. Domestic animals were slaughtered after they already failed to produce anymore. So domestic animals are usually slaughtered when they're 4 or 5 years old or later. When already there's no milk or no offspring or whatever, then they kill them, you know, then there's no use. But animals for korbanos were found all like in the early years, because after that they become balei mum already. And so this was clearly the place where they were sacrificed korbanos. And the excavation revealed that in the end of Bais Rishon, when this bama was put out of commission, it was deliberately covered by 1.5 meters of dirt, meaning it was not destroyed, it was not smashed, it was buried away, making sure people won't use it, but it wasn't smashed. And that fits with what we see here in the Perek, that the Bamos, Yoshio was metame. Metame means to defile, maybe put some dead animals there or something like that, making sure people won't use it, but not a destruction. And the other two that it actually says Vitime, since we already mentioned it, some Farshim say Vitime is a Tofes. The Tofes is a place that's Karka Olam. It's not a Mizbech, it's in the ground, and the ground cannot become Asa. So therefore, there's no reason to smash it. What's he going to do? Dig up the whole ground over there? But he made a place unclean so that people shouldn't go there anymore. But and the third thing is the bum was that it says that Shlomo Melech built for his foreign wives, for Ashtoreth and Kamosh and Milcom. All these again probably there was no worshiping of Avodah Zarah over there. Chazal says Shabikish Lifnos V'Lobana Gemara and Masechah Shabbos. Again, it's not to be taken literally as if he was mamish makir, as if he was mamish made a mizbechos for Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says Malol of Kilu Bana V'Lobana. So again, so these things were not actually things where Avodah Zarah was worshipped, and therefore he was only mitame them and he didn't destroy them. What's interesting also in Arad is that they didn't find any statuettes or stuff like that, meaning no Avodah Zarah were found. So we assume that this Bama was a place that they were Makar L'Shem Shemayim. And they actually found pieces of pottery with names on it, single piece of pottery, unlike in other places in the fortress where they found like letters written on pottery, Elo Yashiv, give so-and-so flour to so-and-so. Here what they found is pieces of pottery on which all they had was names, and some of the names are similar to names that we know of Kohanim families, like Meremos, which is a name from Mishmar, Pashchur, names that we can identify as Kohanim family. Of course, I can't say this is scientific and say that only Kohanim use these names, but I'm saying these are names that are familiar to us from Kohanim. And it's believed that these are like lotteries or stuff like that. We know the Kohanim, they had lotteries, Matilim Chaloshim, Alakotchim, like Mark says, the end of Shabbos. There could be a lottery of who worked or something like that, who did the Avodah there. So that was all evidence proves that what was in Arad was a Bama, the Shem Shemayim. The people who served over there were Kohanim. And when it was destroyed, it was not destroyed, total destruction like the Avodah Zarah, but it was rather buried and to prevent people from continuing to worship in this place. Nearby Be'er Sheva has a very interesting thing. When they excavated Be'er Sheva, they found in walls of the top layer, they found stones, strange stones, and when they pieced all the stones together, they found what came out was a four-cornered altar. Mizbech, with horns on it, with chronos on it. The interesting thing with this Mizbech was that it was made from chiseled stones. Clearly chiseled stones, and to anyone who visits Tel Be'er Sheva today will see a replica of it. The original, I think, is sitting in the Israel Museum. See a replica of it. And the question always, which the unanswered question in Be'er Sheva, first of all, is not clear who destroyed Be'er Sheva and who destroyed this Mizbech. Was it Chizkiyahu who destroyed the Mizbech? Was it Yoshiyahu who destroyed the Mizbech? Those are one of the two possibilities. And the next question is, what was this Mizbech? Was this Mizbech used by the Zara, or was this Mizbech used the Shem Shemayim? So, Dr. Yitzchak Meitlis, a religious archaeologist, he says, well, let's compare the two. In Arad, they covered over the bamos, but in a nearby place called Kitmit, all the stuff that was used, it was smashed to pieces and built into the next layer. So we see that when it came to Avodah Zarah, they smashed the things and built it into the next layer. And so in other words, he says, if we use this logic, then it's clear that the Mizbech that we find at Be'er Sheva, which was, as I remind you, made from chiseled stones, unlike the Mizbech at Arad, which was made from plain stones, shows you that the Mizbech in Be'er Sheva was a Mizbech for Avodah Zarah. Okay, we don't have much artifacts from Be'er Sheva to speak about, but Arad, clearly, and the layout, if time permitting, we'll also get to the layout over there to show some very interesting things. As I said, if time permitting. Now, where's the source? Where's the source that a Bama, Lashem Shamayim, you don't destroy? So we mentioned over here, this Tiyuk, but we have another source, and this has to do with the Haftorah of Kisisa, which we read last week, and we only get to read it in a leap year, because in a regular year, it's Parshas Parah, almost always, if not always. And we have the famous story of Eliyahu and Nevi'eh Baal, the confrontation between Eliyahu and Nevi'eh Baal. And in the briefs, to make the story very brief, Elio challenges Klal Yisrael to Har Carmel. He says, we're going to take two oxen, and you'll, the Nevi'a Baal, he says, you'll take one and put it on the thing without any fire, and you'll pray to your God, and I'll do the other cow, the other ox, and put it on the Mizbech, and whoever will be answered with fire will know that he is, will know that he is the God. And in the end, Elio and Navi is answered, and the fire comes down, consumes the Mizbech. One of the interesting things that we have over here is when Elio went and took care of his par, it says, Ve'irape is Mizbech Hashem Hehoros. He repaired the Mizbech Hashem which had been destroyed. Which is this Mizbech Hashem that had been destroyed? So Rashi says, in the first friend, Rashi says, "Bara mizbech liskeli Yisrael lios mizbech Hashem laola alibam." The shiga b'fiim shayoharus. It's not that the mizbech was destroyed, but the neshem Hashem was destroyed. In other words, they weren't mentioning shem Hashem. So as Rashi in the first friend is saying, it doesn't mean there was a mizbech over there, but he built a mizbech for the sake of Hashem, which had been forsaken. Or midrash or shamati. Sheshol bought a mizbech by Har Carmel. That Shaul built a mizbech on Har Carmel. Bezeu shenemar, ba Shaul a Carmelo, v'nei matziv lo yad. Shaul came to Carmel v'nei matziv lo yad. So, what's the matziv? Well, Alon u'omer v'yatziv shom mizbech. So we see it was a mizbech. Now, why was it horus? U'malcha Yisrael horusu kol mizbechos v'abom shabaratim shenas v'Hashem shamayim. And Malchi Yisrael destroyed all the mizbechos that were done l'shem Shemaim, so they destroyed this bum. This is what Rashi says over here. So we're talking about a bum that was built by Shaul HaMelech, and Shaul HaMelech built it at a time that Shchut Echutz were permissible because it was between Shiloh and Yerushalayim, and this one had been destroyed by Klal Yisrael because this was used l'shem Shemaim, the Klal Yisrael were whatever deserved, they destroyed. This is how Rashi learns over here. So I have to say, the question already, I mean Chazal HaDeresh, but in Pshut Yishal Mikro, the story with Shaul who came to Carmel, Pashola Carmel Avinim Atziv Lo Yad, is not referring to Har Carmel. If he goes to war against Elio, against the Amalek, he's going to the south of the country, and Carmel would be the town of Carmel, which is in the south of Yehuda, the one with David HaMelech and Novel Carmeli, the whole story, and it makes more sense to put it at that city of Carmel, which is in southern Yehuda. And already, if I remember correctly, the Tuos Haaretz already raises this issue and says that B'Pshut Hashem Mikra, we're talking about a totally different place. But nonetheless, in the second shot, Rashi says, we have a Mizbeach, that's L'Shem Hashem. So let's go further on with the story. This we didn't read in the Haftarah, this Haftarah Parshas Pinchas, which is only read in years when Matas and Masay are separate, which I think is this year also, but I'm not sure. And it says that afterwards he slaughtered all the Nevi'a Baal, and then he was forced to run away, because his evil said, tomorrow I'm going to kill you. What does it mean, tomorrow? She kind of hinted him, today, you're too popular. In a couple days, you know, things will calm down and things will be back to usual. And Elio and Navi was forced to run away, and he runs away all the way to Chorev. I think we gave sure about where the Sinai was, but that's a separate issue. And Elio and Navi gets up over there. And a Baskel comes out and says, Malach Apo Elio. Malach Apo Elio, and Elio says, Vayomer, we're in Malachim Perek Aleph, and Malachim Aleph Perek Yutes Pasuk Yudalet. Kano ki neisi l'Hashem alkei tzvokos. Ki azru vizcha b'nei Yisrael. I was mekanei for Hashem, because they have abandoned your bris, es mizbechoisecho harasu, ves neviyecho hargu b'chorev. They destroyed your mizbechos, and they killed the Nevi'im. Now that they killed the Nevi'im, we saw before, he's ever killed all the Nevi'im, except for the 100 which were saved by Ovadia. But, maybe more managed to escape. But, what is this? Mizbechosecha harasu. So Rashi says this is also in Pasukut, by the way, and the Rashi is in Pasukut, the same thing. Vamos yachid hanasos l'shem shamayim. Shai mizbech veis abchir v'shulayim hayah. Rashi's bothered. What does it mean it's mizbechosecho harasu? They destroyed your mizbechos. The mizbechos, the mizbeach, was in Yerushalayim, still standing over there. So Rashi says it's bamos yachid v'shudon l'shem shamayim. Now you can learn this two ways. You can learn it's talking about Brahmas Yochid, which had been built long before the Beis HaMikdash. But in the Pashim Shad here, Rashi is talking about Brahmas that were built the Shem Shamayim even in the Zman HaShchutech. So again, as I'm saying, it's not Muchach and Rashi, could be either or. Since we're talking about the story in Melachim, I just want a couple issues on the story of Eliyahu HaNavi. And Aneini Hashem Aneini, Eliyahu HaNavi davens and says, Hashem, please answer me. With Baruch HaSisi, it's called, he says, Hashem, please answer me, so everyone should know that you are Hashem. But Dvarcha Sisi is called Dvarmel, and I did this with your command. And Rashi says, Shekrafti v'bama b'shas Yisra b'mos. That it was a makriv in a bama b'shas Yisra b'mos. Now, I'm not going to go into all the lumnas here, but a couple of issues to raise and a couple of possibilities. Eliyahu HaNavi goes over here, and as Rashi says, is guilty of Shchut Echutz. Now, in the Pashut Shad, we learn that Hashem actually commanded him directly to go and do it. But, it seems, from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and Tosus over there, right before Perek Chelek, there's a long Tosus, where Tosus seems to say that Eliyahu HaNavi did not get this command directly. From the Gemara, it seems not like that. Gemara would not pay test on the base. The Gemara says, how did they rely on him and they do Shchut Echutz? How did Yitzchak rely on Avram to believe him that he had the mitzvah of the Akedah? Because Avram was a Navi, he was Muchzak. And likewise, Eliyahu Bar and Karmel, how did they rely on him and they did Shchut Echutz? Elechad Muchzak Shaini. But wherever he was Muchzak, when Navi is Muchzak, then you have to listen to him, even though he tells you to do an Avera on a one-time basis. And that's the sugi over here. And Tosus goes over here to a long Arichas, another Gemara, where it seems that he did not get a direct Nevuah. First of all, the question I have in this Gemara, still didn't see anyone that asked it, is where do we see that Klal Yisrael did something in this act? Eliyahu HaNavi, it says, he took it, Vayarach HaSapar, he took it, but where do we see that Klal Yisrael did anything? What does it mean, Sam Chelei Rav Dishchut Echutz? Who relied on him? You could say, maybe they didn't try to prevent, stop it, that's also a possibility. But who was there? All of the people who are even Hashem weren't there. So that's the question. So, we have some interesting possibilities over here. We have a machlokes in Chazal if Eliyahu HaNavi was a kohen or not. And in numerous Gemaras, it seems Eliyahu HaNavi was a kohen. It says by Eliyahu and Bar Metzia, and the end of Bar Metzia, that Eliyahu was in the cemetery, and he asked him, Lav kohen umar, what are you doing in the cemetery? So he said, don't you know, kiva kohen umar matame. So it seems that he's a kohen. But on the other hand, you have in Drashim and Chazal that say no. He says he came from Shevet God, he was not a kohen. So what I wanted to say was that if he was a Kohen, so okay, he was Makav the Korban over here. But if he was not a Kohen, then someone else had to do it. A Kohen had to do it. So that's the question. Did a Kohen have to do it or not? Is Makav by Obama, is a Kohen have to do it or not? Makav by Obama, now Bishas Heter Obamos, so then it's clear. Bishas Heter Obamos. You don't need a kain. That's what Pesach Gemara in Tzvachim. The end of Tzvachim over there. Hakuk Shem Ma'akiv, kain Levim Israel. But here, where Bamas are actually Asar, and you're only allowed to Ma'akiv Yishalayim, so no one's Chiv Kain. Now the question is, now that he's Ma'akiv Bachut, does it require kain or not? So first of all, we brought From the end of Melachim, it seems that the Kohanim are Markov and all the Bamas Machutz, even the Shchulichutz. But this is a whole discussion in Sifrei Achronim, so that's one issue over here. Do you need a Kohen? If you need a Kohen, then Eliyahu Navi himself couldn't do it if he's not a Kohen, and that's a Machlokes in Chazal. The second issue over here was there an issue of Shchut Echutz or not? Now, with regard to the Shechita, the din is, and then the Rambam brings a Masa Kabbonis, and that's a sugya over here in the Nashechet Ramallah, the din is that Shnayim Sheshachtu Apturin. If two people together shechted the animal b'chutz, so the partner. So they had a simple solution over here. If two people could shecht a carbon, but two people, they shecht b'chutz a partner. So they would have a simple solution over here, and that would be that two people would shecht it together, and therefore there's no issur, at least there's no karas in shechut echutz. That's one. Then, the only problem is, when it comes to the halal, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the shiur, when it comes to Allah, the dinim of Shechit and the dinim of Allah are different. When it comes to Allah, two people that are Malah are Chayef. So that's no solution. But the whole question over here is, was there an Isser HaAllah in this case? Why not? Because the Isser HaAllah, as we mentioned before, is an Isser HaKtar, being Makhtarit on the Mizbech. But in the case of Eliyahu, there was no fire on the Mizbeach. He brought it up on the Mizbeach with no fire. And then he davened, Hashem should bring the fire. So the question is it Israel law or not in such a case? And at first, when I thought about this idea, I was a little reluctant to say it. I said, I'll give him shir on Shabbos. I said, you know, it's Shushan Purim Katan, if it's Purim Torah or not. But someone showed me that the discussion can be found in the Aruch Linan Yevamos Av Tzadik Amud Beis, and can also be found in the Dvar of Ram in Chelek Gimel, Siman Aleph over there. As a whole arichas on all these subjects that we're mentioning over here, already I didn't invent the wheel. It's been invented already. It's been discussed. So whether there was an issue of Shechut Echutz over here or not, because it could be there's no halal without fire. So then I came up with an idea, and I saw that the Dvar of Ram already brings this idea also. And maybe, he doesn't ask the question where Klal Yisrael did it, but it brings Rashi. Rashi says that we did an Isser over here, right? So the idea is, it says that before the Eliyahu HaNavi davened, it says, Vayomer, milu abo chadimayim, v'yitzku ala oilo v'ala itzim. Take four pitchers of water and pour on the oil and the eitzim, vayomer shnu vayishnu vayomer shaleshu vayishaleshu. So the idea was that this constituted nisach hamayim, and a manasech, meichag v'chutz chayim, there's an issur of pouring the water, meichag v'chutz chayim, and that's a gemara in Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, and Rama brings it in Perketesh of Maisa Kobanos, so there's an issur of nisach hamayim, and the issur of nisach hamayim, v'chutz, so therefore by them pouring water was an issur of nisach hamayim. So the question is, and this is a very tough question, and the Maaser already, the Kesef Mishnah discusses it, and others. The question is two things. One, if it wasn't Sukkos, is there an Isser of Nisach HaMayim B'chutz? Now, of course, we never know. Maybe the story happened on Sukkos. I don't know. But the odds are not, if we go by my laws of average. So number one, if you don't do a B'chutz, is it? And two, if the water was not Kodesh B'Kli Shareis, is that also an issue of Nisach HaMayim? And the first one to talk about, I see over here, sorry, I think there's a Mishnah corrected, it's the Radbaz. And the Radbaz right away says, Al Kochach B'chag Mayri, and then he goes on to say, even if not B'chag, he has a whole Arichos over here, but the Chayr is Pashet, that you need a Kli Shareis. In other words, the water had to be Kli Shareis, and then you Chayv, and that's exactly what the Dvar of Ram says. When they brought him this suggestion that the Yisrael here was Nisach HaMayim, he says that's a little hard, you know, it's a little hard to accept because it would have to be making Kodesh B'Kli Shareis, and therefore it's hard to say. But as I said, Purim Torah it wasn't. I see already that the issues which we raised over here in the Sugya with Eliyahu HaNavi already mentioned Achren, the Aruch Liner, and the Dvar of Ram. So, but as we said, this is a bummer that was Hashem Shemayim. Rashi brings it from Shol or from somewhere else. Vayirapes Mizbech Hashem Aharus. It was a Mizbech that was destroyed. Let's continue on. Talk about the Bama and Dun. The Bama and Dun, and this is the Bama that Yerovam and Nevat built. Yerovam and Nevat built when the Beis HaMikdash, when Shlomo HaMelech passed away, the kingdom split into two, and Yerovam and Nevat was afraid that Klal Yisrael would go to the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, and that would take them away from him, and he won't be king, and therefore he made two Eglei Zahav, one he put in Beit El, and one he put in Dan. Beit El is just north of Yerushalayim, and Dan is near Kiryat Shmona today, been also extensively excavated. It's not a coincidence that he put in these two cities, for two reasons. One, I'd say, theologically, these places have been used for worship in the past. Beit El, Avram, and Yaakov were there. While Dan, we know that the Pesel Micha was there. That's an interesting story, how to learn the Pesukim in the end of Shoftim, very interesting Malbim over there. The Pesel Micha was there, so it's not coincidence. So A, he took places that have been used for worship in the past. And two, B, is that these basically represented the extent, the edges of his kingdom. Beit El was the south, and Dan, which was the northernmost city in Eretz Yisrael, in the north. So these things represent the edges of the kingdom. Now, in Dan, Dan was excavated, as I said, parts of it, the gate, a couple other parts. The highest place was excavated in Dan, and they actually found the remains of the Bama that Yerovam ben Nevat built. And periods later, it continued to function and was rebuilt a bunch of times, and that was the thing that unfortunately led to the exile of the Ten Shvatim, who most of them have not been seen since. So what do we know from the Bama and Dan? So first of all, the Mizbeach and Dan was also from chiseled stones. Once again, it's far away to Zara, so it doesn't mean Yerov Ben Nevat was so makpin and all the stuff. That's number one. They actually found remains of the Mizbeach. The Egel Azov, of course, was not found. They don't expect that it should be found there. They found small Mizbechos where there were Makhtik Torahs. I think the most fascinating thing that was found in Mizbeach and Dan, for that we have to get to the Gemara in Tzvachim. Daf Samach Aleph on the base. And the Gemara in Tzvachim Samach Aleph on the base says that when the Bnei Agoyla, Mishnah and Midos, when the Bnei Agoyla came back to build by Sheni, they added four amos to the south of the Mizbeach and four amos to the west, making the Mekama Ma'arocha 24x24. So the Gemara says, my Tama, what was the reason for this addition? And the Gemara says, there are a few answers over there. They added the shisin, the holes. Karen Romus Maravas Rashi says, Osifu the Moshkal Adarma Lamarav, Shishamayu Menaschim Nesachim. Over there they poured the Nesachim. Ubime Shleim Ayakamin Bor Kari Eitel Mizbech Mosus Avis, Lared on Nesachim Nesachim. So Rashi says, in the days of Shlomo, there was a hole next to the Mizbech where the Nesachim went from the Mizbech into this hole. And here, they included the hole into the Mizbeach. So Rashi says that the Keren Dromus Mizrachis was near the hole where they used to do the Nesachim. And by Sheni, when they came, they incorporated, enlarged the Mizbeach to include the hole of the Nesachim into the Mizbeach that they built. Why? Because they had a pasuk, achilik ishsiya, a whole discussion over here, that a pasuk that the Nesachim should be together with the Mizbeach itself. So what's interesting about the Mizbeach in Dan? The Mizbeach in Dan, to remind you, was originally built by Rav Menevot clearly to be a competition, as we would say, for competition for the Mizbech in Yerushalayim. Meaning, to prevent people from going to Mizbech in Yerushalayim, the Rav Menavot makes a substitute and he builds his Mizbech over there. So in other words, it's assumed, be safe to assume, or makes sense if we find so, that it was pretty much close to a copy of what was. So let's go over here to the drawing board, and I will show you a fascinating thing that was discovered at the Mizbech in Dan. The Mizbech itself was a square, like the Mizbech in Yerushalayim, equal sides, facing the northwest-southeast orientation, was facing just like the one in Yerushalayim. But what's interesting is that over here, and this is the crucial corner, in this area over here, they actually found a hole, and two stones next to it. They found a hole with two stones. The archaeologists who excavated there is at the conclusion that this was used for a type of nesach, for a type of libation. That's his conclusion. He unfortunately didn't understand, I don't know if he understood what he discovered here, but basically we're looking at the same form of what the Mizbech in Yerushalayim looked like before in Bais Rishon. And once again, take a look of how this is very close to the southwestern corner. Now, in Bais Rishon we said there was a Mizbech, a small Mizbech in Yerushalayim, and in Bais Sheni they added on four amas from the south and four amas from the west. Something like this, to include the Nesachim. Now here, we're exactly looking at. Now the distance between these two was a drop more than four amas, within the range. You might say that from the Gemara it would seem that in Bais Rishon the hole was over here. And that's why it had to be extended in both directions. But that's not the case. Because even if the hole is here, like you see, you can't just add on over here this side from the south, because the Mizbech has got to be Ravua. All sides have to be the same dimensions. So once you add this on, you are forced, you are forced halachically to add on Dalet Amos on this side as well. So in other words, the fact that it says that the Shisin were not included in Bais Rishon and were incorporated in Bais Sheni, doesn't necessarily mean that the hole was over here, as you say. It just means that it was somewhere four amas off, anywhere in this territory over here, which means along this line over here, it was off, and you, by definition, have to add on the. So that's very interesting that the Bama in Dan shows us a situation of a Mizbeach, what Yerushalayim looked like in Bais Rishon before they added on both sides. To finish, I'm going to end off with another very interesting story, and this is something that I only figured out recently, but I think it's true, and the archaeology is very fascinating on this. We have the story in Yom Adav Samach Tes of Shimon HaTzadik meeting Alexander the Great, and I think we spoke about that a couple times in Shiur and in the Hanukkah areas, but... And this story comes from Megillas Tainis, which is one of the earliest written documents of Torah Shebaal Peh. Everything else about that, but Megillas Tainis, and it talks about Yom HaGrizim. And it quotes, and we're not going to go into full detail of this Gemara over here, but we will bring out the relevant points and the interesting thing. V'atanya b'srim v'chamisha b'teves Yom HaGrizim hu. Yom HaSamach Tes, as I said, Amud Aleph. 25th of Tevis is the day of HaGrizim Delola Mispid. It's one of the days listed in Megillas Tainis that you're not allowed to be maspid. Yom Shabikshu Kusim is based on Kedim Alexander Smokdon Lachrivo Venosnole. It was a day that the Kusim requested from Alexander Mokdon, which is Alexander the Great, to destroy the Beis HaMikdash Venosnole, and he gave him permission. Now, I'm not going into the whole history behind this because time is short. I think we spoke about this some other time, so no need to go into this. Bo'u adiru Shimon HaTzadik. They came and notified Shimon HaTzadik about this. Ma'osa. Lavash bigdei kahuna, v'nisante v'bigdei kahuna. He put on bigdei kahuna, u'miyakir Yisrael imo, and he went with the chashev people, a whole delegation, v'avuka shalor bideim, and torches. V'kol alayla, ha'yu alolu olchim mitzadzeh, v'alolu olchim mitzadzeh. The whole night, Shimon HaTzadik is going out to greet Alexander and plead his case with the Beis HaMikdash. While Alexander is coming to Yerushalayim, he wants to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Ad she'ol amud ha'shachar, until dawn came. Kimon she'ol amud ha'shachar, amal ha'mi alalu, he saw these people from far away. He says, who are these? Amal ha'yehudim shemar debuchad, these are the Jews who revolted against you. I said, we're not going to go into the whole history, but the basic idea was, when Alexander the Great captured Yerushalayim, the Kusiyim supported him. And Alexander the Great and the Jews did not, because Shimon HaTzadik was loyal to the Persian king. So naturally, once he was victorious, he paid those who supported him, and he punished those who revolted against him, who refused to. Kivan shegel Antipatris zor chachama. When they came to Antipatris, which is a place, Tanakh city of Afek near Rosh Ha'ayin today, zor chachama, the sun started shining. Upaguzeh bezeh, and they met each other. Kivan shirol Shimon HaTzadik. When he saw Shimon HaTzadik, yard mimerkafter, he got off of his chariot, mishtachul the fun of it. He bowed down to Shimon HaTzadik. Amalo, his advisors told him, Melech gol kamos mishtachul Yehudi zeh, a great king like you should bow down to this Jew. Amalo, it was yokno shel zeh, natzach sefan of Beis Mechamti. The image of this guy is victorious for me in my wars. And I think Josephus brings the story, he's saying that he was once in a war and he was about to lose, and he saw the image of Shimon HaTzadik and he won. In other words, this was the image that he saw when he went to war. Amalav Lama Basa, he said, where did you come from? Amru. Is it possible that the house where they pray for your welfare and your kingdom, these should mislead you to destroy it? Says, who are these? They are these Kusim, the Samaritans. They are given over in your hands. They made holes in their heels. With lomas in with Sam, they tied them on to the tails of the horses. And they dragged them over the thorns. Until they came to Agrizim. They plowed Hargrizim and they planted a Kashinim, which is Machal Behema, Kedech Shavik Shulasas of Beis Elokim, just as they wanted to do to Beis HaMikdash. So this is, we have the story. So what was this? Over here it does mention that they were over the Kechovim, these Samaritans, but what was this temple on Hargrizim? So already the Tosfos Yeshanim, if I remember correctly, asked a question. Tamei l'Rabbi Elchanan, v'chiyoy ovdim ha'agrizim ha'ashim na'tzadik, v'lo nechshad rad rameyik adam ha'mechulim, d'mus yonim ha'atzalam ha'agrizim. So he asked a question. He says, how could it be that they are worshipping on ha'agrizim from the days of Shimon HaTzadik, when the Gemara in Chulin, the first parak, says that only the days of Rav Meir, then there was a miut. Rav Meir chayes a miuta. Only the days of Rav Meir, then were they suspected of Chulin Avav Amin Aleph. Only then were they suspected of worshipping Avodah Zarah. So how could it be? That's the question that Tosfos Yeshanim brings from Rabbeinu Elchanan. But Lemaisa, and I think already the Yaakov Emden over here answers and whatever, is that it's a little historical inaccuracy over here, misunderstanding, if we may say so, with the question. Because there are two issues over here. And as we said before, there's Avodah Zarah and the Shechut Echutz. The Samaritans, the Kusim, worshipping Hargrizim, was not Avodah Zarah. It was Hashem Shemayim. Except that they did it on Hargrizim. They were Jews, and although we have a shot of the Kusim Ger Emes and Ger Arayas, Matosas already asked the question and says that later on they were misguided. These people were full-fledged Jews except one thing they had in their head. The mountain to worship is Hargrizim. But they are worshipping Hashem. That's not the case of Dmus Yoyna. Is hundreds of years later, where there was a Roman temple on one of the lower mountaintops of Hargrizim. And then it seems that some Kusim also secretly worshipped this also. But as we said, that was the miut. It's not all of them worshiping Hagrizim openly, like the Mishnah and the Darim, Ma'ali Yerushalayim, they were the Hagrizim. In Masechus Kusim, it says, all you need for a Kusi to be accepted is that he's got to be Koyfer by Hagrizim and Mekabel Yerushalayim. They're worshiping Hashem. It's not of a Dizara. The Mikdash and Hagrizim is not of a Dizara. What's interesting is that it never says over here that they destroyed the base of Mikdash, the Mikdash that was at Hagrizim. It never says that over here. It says, they came to Hagrizim, Choshu v'zaru kashinim, they plowed it, and they planted kashinim, k'dech shavikshu l'asas v'beis elokim. But it doesn't say what they did to the base of Mikdash. And as I said, you have a, probably they had this dilemma there also. What can we do? On the one hand, we have to get even with them and we have to put a stop to this temple on Hagrizim. But on the other hand, there was Hashem Shammai. What's interesting is in the excavations on Hagrizim, first of all, Josephus says that the original temple on Hagrizim was only built in the days of Alexander. That's when he dates it. While here, it seems that it was standing before. All the Kefirim historians discredit the Megillas Tainis, but the archaeological evidence is loud and clear. Megillas Tainis is very accurate. And the original temple on Hagrizim was built in the Persian period. Not like Josephus says. Long before Josephus mentions it, it was built. Then it was destroyed at a certain time, probably the end of the Persian period, and rebuilt again. And its final destruction was by the Hashmonai King Yochanan Harkonnes, who captured the Shomron. Now that is mentioned in Josephus that he captured. So all the historians, the Kefirim, who don't want to believe in the Rosh Tate and Gemara, have all kinds of things. What is this Megillas Tainis talking about? But the bottom line is, archaeologically speaking, the Megillas Tainis is very accurate. There were two stages on the temple on Hagrizim. One from the Persian period, and that's what we're talking about over here. And indeed, later on, they rebuilt it, and it was destroyed by a Yochanan Harkonnes. What's interesting, though, is that the archaeologist who excavated Hagrizim, he refuses to define the end of the first layer as a destruction. He says it was rebuilt, it was renovated. He doesn't see a sign over here of something burned and destroyed. Now, an archaeologist, again, as I always say, with all due respect to archaeology, they know what they find, but they never know what they don't find. Meaning, if I find a destruction, I can say it's a destruction. But is it possible that something is destroyed, not leaving evidence of a destruction? As if you find a fire and it burned, okay, what happens if they just dismantle it and took all the stones and put it away? So how do you define that archaeologically speaking? So that could be by your renovation or whatever. So I would say it would seem that there was an end to this temple at the end of the Persian period in time of Alexander the Great, as it says over here, but it wasn't a violent end like in the days of Yochanan Harkonnes, or I'd say a violent end just like it happened to the Beis HaMikdash Lahavdil. It wasn't the same type of destruction. Again, how to define it? It's very hard because once they rebuilt it, so how do we know what, once they rebuilt it, how do we have any idea? How do we know what happened to it? So as I said, it's not a violent destruction. They definitely put it out of commission for a while until the Samaritans rebuilt the temple, but it wasn't a violent destruction. And the reason would be because it was a Mikdash that was built to Shem Shammai. And since it was built to Shem Shammai, it could not actually be destroyed, and therefore it had to be treated differently than a base of a desire. That's how we have to say. And we have a few minutes. Okay, we have a few minutes. I'll add another very... if we have a Chumash Vayikra here, I'll add one more very interesting point. We mentioned the Mishnah and Menachos, and the Mishnah and Menachos... the Mishnah and Menachos, once again, it says that Achlo Yalu Kone Abomos El Mizbach Hashem B'Yerushalayim, those who served in Shechutei Chutz or for Avodah Zarah cannot serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Now we have a very interesting thing in Chumash Vayikra. Vayikra El Moshe Vayadav Hashem Elov, we all learned this, is the first thing we learned. Tava bnei zara, emala karbana, okay. V'samachet arvash ha'ola, v'shachas ben abaka, shchitet sher bizar, v'krivu bnei aharon ha'kerenim v'sadom. Bnei aharon should be marked. Now to us, that doesn't surprise us. I tell you bnei aharon, it means descendants of Aharon ha'kerenim. But in essence, it is a little surprising. Because why does it say Aharon ha'kerenim himself? Why does it say bnei aharon? And all over in Parshas Vayikra, all you have is bnei aharon. All you have is Bnei Aharon in Parshas Vayikra. Vekir Balakoyen, but it doesn't mention Aharon. Vezorku Bnei Aharon Kodesh Sadam by Shlomim. Suddenly, when you get to Parshas Tzav, I dive Hashem Moshe Lema. Tzav is Aharon as one of Lema. Zos Taras Ola here, Ola Mokta Muzak. Suddenly, Aharon comes into the picture over here. Where was he till now? So the Medrash says like this. The din is the wood that you use to be makiv on mizbeach. Kol ha'itzim sherim, chutz mishel, zayis and mishel gefen. The only two types of wood that you can use on mizbeach is zayis and gefen. And the pashut said, and as the Gemara says clearly, the reason is because they make smoke. They cause smoke. But in the Medrash it says differently. It says from the gefen you get wine, which you pour on the mizbeach. From the olive tree, you get olive oil, which you mix into the mincha and you put on the mizbech. And because you use from their fruits on the mizbech, therefore Hashem says it's not proper to destroy those trees and use them on the mizbech. That's what it says in the Medrash. So it says when, in this parsha, here Oilo Moitel Mizbech, we're talking about the wood in the mizbech, it says in the Medrash that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Ribbono Shel Olam, until now, there's no Aharon HaKohen. Why not? Because he did the Chet HaEgel. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, you have rachmanis on the children of the offspring. Because of the offspring, because of the fruit that these trees produce, you don't destroy the tree. Likewise, for the same reason, you should have rachmanis on Aaron just for the sake of Bnei Aaron. In other words, if Bnei Aaron are eligible, then the father should also be eligible. So suddenly over here, Tzavas Aaron is born of Lema. That is what it says in the Medrash. So, kumtos, that in Parshas Vayikra, the status of Aaron is still, he's out because of the Chet HaEgel. We see even Parshas Shemini, he had a special, had a daven and whatever, because of the Chet HaEgel. So, I said something, but it wasn't accurate. There are two places in Parshas Vayikra where it doesn't mention Aaron. The remainder of the Mincha, there it says La'aron Olavanov. When it comes to Akrava, Aaron, no. But suddenly over here it does say Aaron. So according to this, we understand why. Because the Kohen, who's Makriv to Avodah Zarah, is not, cannot be Makriv on the Mizbeach. But he's eligible to get a Chelek in the Korbanos. So in the whole Parsha of Vayikra, where Aaron had a status of someone who was makiv for Avodah Zarah, so Aaron can't be makiv. This one only says Bnei Aharon. But when it comes to Vaneseres Min HaMincha, when it comes to the Chelik that's eaten, there it says La'aron Olavanov. Because there, Aaron is eligible. Because even a Kohen, who's makiv for Avodah Zarah, who cannot do Avodah, but he's eligible to get a Chelik in the Korbanos. So there, it actually says La'aron Olavanov.